Welcome everyone to this WebSphere Support Technical Exchange session. Today's topic is WebSphere Plugin, Session Affinity, and Load Balancing. Today's presenter is Bob Richter. Bob joined the WebSphere Level 2 team in 2007. Immediately prior to that, he worked in WebSphere development. At this time, I would like to turn the presentation over to Bob.
Thank you, David. Okay, let's get started. Welcome. The topic for this presentation is WebSphere Plugin Session Affinity and Load Balancing. Can we go to slide 2? The agenda for this presentation will start with Session Affinity, since you cannot fully analyze plugin load balancing without an understanding of how plugin handles Session Affinity. Then we'll have an overview of plugin load balancing, and finally we'll discuss how to interpret plugin log entries related to plugin load balancing. Slide 3, please. There are two ways to implement Session Affinity with WebSphere Application Server: Session ID Cookie and URL Rewrite. Session ID Cookie uses a cookie header in the request, and a browser holds the cookie and returns it to the server whenever the user makes a subsequent request. By default, WebSphere defines its cookies so they are destroyed if the browser is closed. URL rewriting works by storing the session identifier in the page returned to the user. This requires some additional programming for applications because all links that you return to the browser must have the session ID appended to them. The focus for all Session Affinity references in this presentation will be based on Session Affinity using the Session ID cookie. Slide 4. Session Affinity allows returning requests to be routed back to the same application server if that same server is available. The application server session ID cookie is set through the WebSphere administration console under the application server section, session management. The default name for the application server session ID cookie in WebSphere is the JSession ID. The WebSphere plugin handles Session Affinity using a server clone ID, which is contained in the JSession ID. Slide 5. The plugin configuration file contains plugin properties that determines the routing of requests through the WebSphere plugin to the application server. The key properties that determine the plugin routing of requests are the route, virtual host, the URI, and the transport. But the clone ID is the plugin property used for Session Affinity. It is contained in the server object tag of the plugin config XML. Slide 6. A bit more about the clone ID. The clone ID is generated to the plugin config XML once Session Affinity is configured for the application server cluster. The clone ID is contained within the JSession ID cookie assigned at each client at session startup. The clone ID is automatically generated by the application server as part of the JSession cookie, but the clone ID may be manually set using the custom property HTTP server clone ID. See links at the end of this presentation for details on setting up the clone ID using this custom property. Slide 7. The JSession ID cookie is comprised of three values. The cache ID and session ID are used by the WebSphere application server to access and manage session data. The clone ID, which is used by the WebSphere plugin for session, is used by the WebSphere plugin for session affinity and routing. The clone ID is the only part of the JSession ID cookie that is used by the WebSphere plugin. Slide 8. As part of plugin request processing, the plugin will match the request URI to a server cluster using the virtual host and the URI. This is done for every request, including session affinity requests. Then, if a JSession ID cookie exists, it is parsed to locate the clone ID. Only the clone ID is used to determine the appropriate server for route of the request. The clone ID overrides any virtual host or URI mappings to the request from the plugin. Slide 9. This is an excerpt from a generated plugin config XML with a clone ID. See the unique clone ID in bold and the associated application servers also in bold type. The clone ID is unique for each application server in the cluster. Slide 10. This is an excerpt from a generated plugin config XML showing the Affinity cookie JSession ID. This is how the plugin knows what cookie to look for and parse for session affinity. Slide 10? 11? Okay, then the next few slides will contain excerpts of the plugin log to illustrate how the plugin handles session affinity using the clone ID in the JSession ID cookie. The slides will show the application server set cookie, the plugin parse of the clone ID from the JSession ID cookie, the plugin match of the clone ID to the JSession ID cookie, and finally an actual post request with a cookie header containing JSession ID. This slide shows a set cookie plugin log entry. The JSession ID cookie is set by the application server on a response from the application server. The application server sets the JSession ID affinity cookie whenever a new session is started, for example, login or an expired cookie. This is the start of an application server session. This log entry is written when plugin log level is set to detail in the plugin config XML. The JSession ID contains the clone ID in red, which you can see is separated from the session ID by a colon. Once a clone ID is set, the affinity for a specific application server is established. Subsequent requests will be routed to the same application server as long as that application server is available. Slide 12. The log entries on this slide show the plugin comparing the clone ID in red, which is from the application server object in the plugin config XML, to the clone ID in blue, which is parsed from the JSession ID session affinity cookie on the request from the browser. Slide 13. The log entries on this slide show the plugin has matched a clone ID in the plugin config XML to the clone ID in the JSession ID cookie. Based on this match, the application server in the server cluster is selected, the host and port is obtained from the application server transport, and the connection is made to the application server and the request is sent. Slide 14. This final log entry on this slide shows the post request logged by the plugin before the request is sent to the application server. You can see the detail log level includes the JSession ID cookie header with the cache ID, the session ID, and the clone ID. Slide 15. Okay, a few points to remember about how the plugin handles session affinity. The session ID of the JSession ID cookie may expire, but the clone ID does not expire. This means that browsers may send expired JSession ID cookies. Browsers should typically not send expired cookies. It's important to note that the plugin does not check for an expired session ID when parsing for the clone ID. The plugin only checks for the clone ID to match to the application server. So if a client application sends an expired JSession ID, which contains a valid clone ID, then session affinity will be honored based on the clone ID, even though the JSession ID session ID itself is expired. The application server will set a new session ID in the JSession ID cookie, but not reset the clone ID. The reason why I mention this is this can affect plugin load balancing because this request is being treated as an affinity request when in fact it really is a new request. This is a scenario where manually setting the clone ID and regenerating the plugin config XML can clear existing session affinity and in a sense reset all plugin distribution of all requests. However, setting a new clone ID will break all existing sessions. Slide 16. Okay, now we'll move on to plugin load balancing. There are two methods for plugin load balancing. Round robin, which attempts to distribute the work across application servers in the cluster based on configured load balance weights. Round robin works best in a single processor environment because the load balance weights used by round robin are not global weights. That is, the weights are not common through all of the web server processes. These weights are managed separately in each web server process that the plugin runs. The second plugin load balancer method is random, which the routing of the request is based on a random algorithm. Random plugin load balancing method is recommended for web servers with multiprocessor environments. Random is designed to distribute an even number of requests. There are no weights. The random selection is global across all processes and not based on any process-based variables. The scope of both plugin load balancing methods is within a single cluster. Slide 17. So the key plugin property for round-robin load balancing is the load balance weight. The load balance weight is initially configured by the administrator through the WebSphere administration console. See the administration console under the cluster section, cluster members, for changing of load balance weights. The load balance weight is a number between 0 and 100. There is a load balance weight for each application server in the cluster. The weight is the basis for the round-robin algorithm. Slide 18. There are multiple factors that make up the plug-in load balancing round-robin algorithm. There is a link later which can give details on the calculation itself, but generally the key factors in plug-in round-robin distribution are internal router table weights and session affinity. The internal router table weights are initially based on the configured load balance weights, but these internal or dynamic weights are reset based on certain criteria. The concept of sticky and non-sticky is directly related to session affinity. A sticky request is a request with session affinity established. Any reference to sticky requests can be considered a session affinity request. A non-sticky request is a request in which session affinity is not established. Typically, a new request is considered a non-sticky request in which no affinity has been established. The plug-in load balances only new and non-sticky requests. Slide 19. All right. Here's a bit more detail on how the plug-in load round-robin plug-in load balancing works. The initial internal router table weights are set using the configured load balance weights and dividing by the greatest common divisor, GCD. As each request is routed to the application server, the internal router table weight is decremented by one. Note that we will decrement weights by one for both affinity and non-affinity requests. However, there are some special considerations. Once an internal router weight reaches a value of zero, then non-sticky requests or new requests are not routed to that application server for which the internal router weight is less than or equal to zero. But sticky or session affinity requests will continue to be routed to an application server whose internal router table weight is zero or less. We continue to decrement the weight for each request. So you can see that session affinity overrides any plug-in load balancing new requests. And the internal router table weight can become negative. Slide 20. So when the internal router table weights for all of the cluster members is less than or equal to zero, the plug-in component will reset the internal router table weights using an algorithm. The internal router table weight may not be set to their initial values, and this process is repeated over and over. Slide 21. Okay, for the more detail-minded, here is the actual plug-in algorithm used to reset the internal router table weights. The algorithm formula is defined to find a minimum number M such that W plus M times S is greater than zero for all application servers. W in this case is the current internal router table weight. S is the starting internal router table weight. You can see the link on this slide for details and an example, but the next few slides, we're actually going to go through a simple example, which hopefully will make it a little bit clearer. Slide 22. Okay, so here's our example. We have three application servers, and we start with configured load balance weights for server 1 is 8, for server 2 is 6, for server 3 is 18. So we're favoring server 3 for whatever reason. Most customers would probably want equal load balancing, but for this example, we're going to use uneven weights. So we calculate that GCD to be 2 because it's the least common divisor for the numbers 8, 6, and 18. So based on the configured load balance weights and the GCD, we determine that these initial internal router table weights for server 1 is going to be 4, server 2 is 3, and server 3 is 9. The plugins handling requests over a period of time, and as I said before, until all the servers in the internal, all the servers end up with an internal router table weight of 0 or less. In this case, the current internal router table weights at this point, after some time of the plugin load balancing and routing requests, for server 1 ends up being minus 20, server 2 minus 40, and server 3 0. So note that server 1 and server 2 contain negative numbers because we continue to route sticky or affinity requests to them after the internal router table weight for each of those servers was 0. So now we have the point at which all three server weights are 0 or less than 0. So the plugin is going to reset or adjust the current internal router table weights. Slide 23. Using the plugin algorithm, we find a number for that variable M turns out to be equal to 14, for which the algorithm is true. Then we apply the value of the variable M to the equation. And in this example, each server equation establishes a new internal router table weight. And in this example, for what we see here for server 1, it had a current internal router table weight of minus 20. It had an initial internal router table weight of 4. And when you apply the formula, you get a new internal router table weight of 36. So likewise with server 2 and server 3, server 2 has a current internal router table weight of minus 40. It had an initial weight of 3, and now it has a new weight of 2. Server 3 had an internal router table of 0, an initial internal weight of 9, and a new weight of 126. So hopefully this will be a little clearer on the next slide, 24. So to summarize this, and make it clearer, I guess, is based on the initial configured load balance weights and the internal router table weights, the intent was initially to favor, respectively, server 3 with a router table weight of 9, server 1 with a weight of 4, and server 2 with a weight of 3. The actual distribution, because of session affinity, favored, respectively, server 2 with 43 requests, server 1 with 24 requests, and server 3 was last with 9 requests. So to adjust plug-in load balancing, the new established internal router table weights, server 3 is 126, server 1 is 36, server 2 is 2. So you can see that server 3 has the highest new internal router table weight because it initially had the highest configured load balance weight, and yet handled 0 requests in the last period of distribution. So the new higher internal router weight for server 3 will ensure that server 3 is favored. It's more likely that server 1 and server 2, with new weights of 36 and 2 respectively, will get to 0 sooner than server 3, which has a weight of 126. Therefore, it's much more likely that server 3 will be available to handle new requests than server 1 and server 2. Slide 25. Okay. Now we'll look at we're going to look at how to interpret this plug-in load balancing using the plug-in log. In order to log plug-in load balancing data, we need to set the log level in the plug-in config XML to log level stats. There is a specific stat log entry which contains some key counters for each application server on each web server process. I'll define what these counters are, and then we will see an example of these values in the plugin logstats entry. Pending requests are requests that are issued to the application server for which the plugin has not yet received a response. This is the actual real-time pending request. If this number grows, you may have some type of delay in the application server. This number will go up and down, and in a good environment may always be zero. Failed requests is the cumulative number of failed requests for this application server within this web server process. Slide 26. Affinity requests is the cumulative number of affinity requests for a specific application server and a specific web server process. These are all requests that have been routed to the application server based on the clone ID, and the plugin load balancing has been bypassed. Total requests is the cumulative number of all requests for a specific application server and specific web server process. Total requests is equal to affinity requests plus new requests. Stats entries are logged after each request is handled. Since we're only interested in the final numbers for plugin load balancing, then we only need to review the last stat log entry for each application server for each web server process. Note that I'm mentioning log entries for each application server and each web server process. Since the plugin may run on multiple processes, the plugin load balancing is handled on multiple web server processes, and so each process maintains a separate set of stats for each application server. Slide 27. Okay, here's an example of stats log entries pulled from a plugin log. When reviewing stats for the plugin load balancing on a multiple process web server, you need to find the last stat log entry for each application server on each web server process. In this extract of a plugin log with log level stats, there are two application servers and two web server processes. In this slide, we show the last stats log entry for processes B0 and F8 and the associated application servers server 1 and server 2. Slide 28. So this is what we can derive from the stats log entry for each application server on each process. Server 1 on process B0 handled 637 requests, of which 632 were session affinity requests, which means the plugin load balanced 5 new requests. Server 2 on process B0 handled 846 total requests, of which 842 were session affinity requests, which means the plugin load balanced 4 new requests. Server 1 on process F8 handled total requests of 671, of which 666 were session affinity requests, which means the plugin load balanced 5 new requests. Server 2 on process F8 handled total requests 877, of which 872 were affinity requests, which means that the plugin load balanced 5 new requests. So you can see the plugin load balancing of new requests appears to be pretty consistent across the servers and the processes. In this case, the number of requests, total and affinity requests for server 1 on process B0 and F8 is relatively close. This is not always the case. If a web server process is created later in the life of the web server, you may see a large difference in the total number of requests and affinity requests for the same application server on a different process. However, over time, the plugin will ensure that new requests are load balanced. Notice also that the number of total requests and affinity requests for server 1 and server 2 within each process is not close, but the number of new requests is close. The plugin can only load balance new and non-affinity requests. The plugin cannot load balance affinity requests or total requests. Slide 29. Okay, one additional point about plugin load balancing. This slide identifies a method for gracefully taking an application server in a cluster offline. Based on the plug-in load balancing design, no new requests will be routed to an application server with an internal router table weight of zero. If the configured load balance weight is set to zero, the internal router table weight will be set to zero, and no new requests will be routed. However, it's important to note that any existing sticky or affinity requests will continue to be routed until all sessions are timed out or closed. Slide 30. And one final point, not related to plug-in load balancing directly, but worth mentioning. The plug-in property max connections represents the max number of connections between the web server and each application server on each web server process. Max connections is best left to the default value of minus one, which means unlimited. This is a tunable property, however, but it requires much thought and consideration. The primary advantage in setting a limit on max connections to a particular application server can be to prevent web server threads from being used up by requests waiting on an application service that is non-responsive. In a scenario where one application server is non-responsive, but other application servers are responsive, it would be best to allow web server resources to handle requests for the responsive application servers. But if we continue to use web server connections for a non-responsive application server, we may run out of threads to handle requests for the responsive application servers. So limiting the number of connections to an application server may help the web server and plugin in overall throughput of requests during some type of application server failure. See the link on this slide for additional details. Let me go to slide 31. Here are links related to the custom property HTTP session clone ID and how to manually configure the clone ID. Slide 32. Here are some links for details on plug-in load balancing. And slide 33. These are some links related to cluster setup and web server tuning. Slide 34. Here's a link with additional web server product resources. And now I'm going to turn the presentation back over to David.
Thank you, Bob, for a great presentation. At this time, we would like to open the lines for questions.
There is a question from Robert Gagliardi. Your line is open.
Hi, Bob. Thanks for the presentation. The question I have is there a way to reset those internal load balance weights without restarting the web servers?
Yes, actually, that's a good question. I should have covered it. It's actually something to be aware of. If you dynamically, the plugin config XML can be dynamically loaded. I don't know if you're familiar, periodically based on one of the plugin properties, I think it's a refresh interval, the plugin will go out and check to see if the plugin config XML hasn't changed. One way you can do it is to touch that plugin config XML. And what that does is that reloads the plugin config XML and, in fact, resets all of those counters.
So that will also reset the internal ones, not just the ones that are set within the plugin?
It will reset all of the counters related to the stats log entry, pending, okay. Affinity, total. It will not reset internal weights, if that's what you mean.
Yeah, that's what I was getting at, because eventually the internal weights are what it uses to balance traffic, not the initial starting weights, right?
Right, right. The starting weights are just to get us initially going. So to answer your question, if you mean the internal weights, there's no way to reset those.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay.
Ronald Brigman, your line is open.
Yes, I'm curious. What impact does restarting either the application server or the web server have on these affinity sessions?
Okay. Well, from an affinity standpoint, if you restart the application server, you're going to lose session data, right? I mean, so in essence, you're not going to break session affinity. It's a two-step process. The first concern is you're going to lose session data. So if the plugin continued to route requests after it comes back up, the session data is gone, and you're going to force re-logins, and new sessions are going to have to be created. The second piece to it is if you take the application server down, as you would in a restart, it'll be down for some period of time. The plugin is going to take any request with a clone ID that matches that application server, and it's going to fail it over to an application server within the cluster that matches. Does that answer the question?
Yes.
Okay.
Thank you. There is a question from Ignacio Elisavetsky. Your line is open.
Yes, hi. I actually posted to the group chat, but my question is, what are the best practices regarding plugin settings when applications are known for very long-running queries? And also very long queries to database, and they come back with a report, and it may take maybe, let's say, 10 minutes to come back with something, or 20 minutes, and also for very long-running downloads.
Okay. That hits on the plugin property, most likely, if you're familiar, server I/O timeout.
Mm-hmm.
And this would be the way I would pursue it. Some people would advocate a server I/O timeout of zero, which says, okay, you know, I'm not going to wait on any requests. I'm going to leave it up to the operating system and the TCP layer to time out the connection.
That's too short.
I don't like that. I would prefer that what you do is if you're running the IHS web server, there's an option to the log format directive in there, which will log the length of time in seconds or microseconds, and in your case it would be seconds, and it'll record in the access log as each request response is logged. It'll record the length of time it took for all these requests. And what I would recommend is to enable that. It's not a big deal from a performance standpoint. And then you get that value, add about 20 seconds to it, and set an actual server I/O timeout that's realistic for your environment. That way you don't leave the web server threads hanging around waiting for the OS TCP layer to get rid of those threads. And you will be advised, it'll be more clean in the event of a failure that you're starting to have problems running that long-running request. Does that make sense?
Yeah, and I think we have it turned on, but we do have an IHS server in the front end. So,
I mean, IHS has that. I don't know about other web servers as far as logging the length of time for the request. Sometimes you can.
What is the actual directive? What is the actual directive on the HTTP.conf?
Okay, the directive is called log format.
Right.
And the defaults in there are combined and common, and
yeah.
You won't find the percent T. It's called it's a percent T option. You'll
okay.
find it off of the Apache website under logging module. It'll show all those different options.
We do have extended log format. I just didn't know what was the percentage T was the time that they will log the transaction time.
Correct. Uppercase T, by the way, percent uppercase T.
Uppercase T. Okay, thank you.
Thank you. We do have a couple in the group chat. The first one is load balancing affected by memory-to-memory mapping turned on between end servers in a cluster?
Okay. I would say memory-to-memory has to do more with session persistence than with session affinity. And what I mean by that is session affinity is the means by which you are routed to the server for which affinity is initially established. Session persistence has to do with what the app server is going to do when the plugin fails over to another application server. Memory-to-memory and database sharing have to do with sharing that session data so that the failover is transparent to the client. That's about as much as I can say, other than the load balancing itself is not affected by memory-to-memory or session persistence.
Right. Thank you. And then the next question, what log level inside of the plugin config XML should be set to in order to see pending requests and failed request numbers?
Okay, that's the stats log level, STATS.
Okay, thank you.
I'll note, you'll also, if you went lower, like trace, you would get that as well. But stats is the minimum log entry needed for those entries.
Okay, thank you. And then another question. In a production environment, let's say we have a problematic JVM, then how do we make a JVM to continue serving existing traffic but not route any new session requests so that we can gradually take it out of rotation once it completes serving the existing session?
Okay, I think that's what I was, I may have done a bad job. That's what I was trying to explain. If I understand it correctly, you want existing traffic, existing affinity traffic to continue to the JVM, but you don't want to continue to load new requests on it. And the answer to that is to set the configured load balance weight to zero, and in turn, that will set an internal weight to zero, and no new requests will be routed to that app server. And then it's just a matter of waiting out your clients to be going away before you can take that JVM out of service.
Right. Thank you. And then another question. How often, and I know you mentioned this earlier, how often does a plugin reload, if you will, its plugin config XML?
Okay. The plugin config XML is reloaded only if the file has changed. Internally, what the plugin module itself will do is it performs I believe it's called a stat type of operation, which basically I think is reading the timestamp. And if the timestamp indicates a change from the last stat request, it recognizes the plugin config XML's change and it will reload it. The interval that determines how long the plugin waits for that is called the refresh interval, and that's a property in the plugin config XML.
Okay, thank you. And then another question, and you did mention this in your presentation. Could you please elaborate on why random load balancing is preferred for multi-process web servers as opposed to round robin?
Okay, the reason why we say this, I mean, round robin is many cases is clean and clear and works well, but the problem is the reason why we recommend it is that the round robin algorithm is working independently in each web server process. So if you have a web server that is running, you know, as in the form of Linux type of Unix type environments, if you're running 2, 3, 4, 5, 10 different processes, It's important to understand that the each algorithm is working independently in each of those processes. So overall, if you were to look at the distribution to server one, it's independently there are 10 processes that are attempting to balance it. So you don't the important point is you're not getting a global balance. That's about as much as I can say. It's not a poor thing to do. It's just we found that it's cleaner if you used random. And theoretically, it makes more sense because it's just randomly going to spray the requests across each of the processes.
Thank you. And then the next question. Can I set the weight of the server to zero at runtime? Is there a dependency on the WebSphere application server version?
No, there's not. It should not be. If you, I know for a fact the administration console will let you do it because I tested it. If you set it to zero, you basically at plugin startup, you're not going to get any new requests. But be aware, as I indicated, if the JSession ID comes in with a clone ID match, even though the session ID is expired, there may be attempts to route to that app server. And that I may not have emphasized that much, but it I've seen it many times. If there's an old JSession ID and the clone ID is valid, we're going to attempt to route to that server.
Okay, thank you. And then, if setting the weight to zero resets the internal weight, couldn't we momentarily set each server's weight to zero to reset the internal weights?
This has to do with it's an initial weight versus a dynamic weight. The initial configured weight, from a division and multiplication standpoint, zero times zero is zero. So if the configured weight is zero, you're always going to have an internal weight of zero. And as I said before, there's no way to actually externally touch the internal weight. So the internal weight comes to be zero on its own and is reset.
Okay, thank you. And then another question. We have seen if a server goes down for whatever reason, the plugin does mark that server down and reroute traffic to the other node or server. But we have also seen where a server is hung and the plugin seems to still try and route traffic to the server that is hung. What kind of check does the plugin do to determine the health or if a server can receive traffic, and can that be enhanced to detect if a server is hung?
Yeah, that's kind of a good question. The first distinction is, the plugin recognizing an application server as being non-responsive is one thing. The plugin's not aware of an application server actually being stopped. So, a plugin will continue to route requests regardless of the status of the application server externally. Having said that, some of the key pieces that will cause a plugin to mark the application server down are server I/O timeouts that I mentioned earlier. If those pop, we will attempt to mark a server down, and connection timeouts. Certain errors will mark the server down. It's a temporary state. Even the length of time that you mark the server down is also configurable. What else can I say about it? As far as an app server being hung, the plugin, if all of the responses to requests are being handled within the various time frames and checks within the plugin, the plugin's really not going to look at it as unhealthy. And, there's been some discussion about using the pending requests to trigger some markdowns, but that hasn't been implemented. It's been considered. And the last thing I'll mention on this is that you can also, based on server I/O timeouts, negative numbers, you can choose to never mark the app server down, and some customers prefer that. So that's about as all as I can say on it. It's involved, and there are many factors that would mark the app server down.
Okay, thank you. And then the next question, and I know I believe you've already addressed this, but someone's asking, is there a way to monitor the load distribution for every node?
Okay, not externally. There may be Tivoli monitoring applications that could do something, but from my viewpoint as a plugin guy internally, those stat log entries can do it. If you pull stat log entries over time, you'll get those numbers, and whatever node you're interested in, just be careful to make sure you pull the numbers on all application servers on the node and all processes if you have a multiprocessor environment.
Okay, thank you. And then another question. Can we change the logging information without restarting the IHS instance?
Absolutely. If you mean the plugin logging instance, absolutely. It's dynamic. Most properties in the plugin are dynamic, and in fact, that's how we would recommend that customers enable log level trace for recreates and must gather of documentation for debugging.
Thank you. And then another question, can you configure the logs for the plugin to either rotate on the file size or date?
Yep, that's been kind of a long-standing requirement. I think I can say this, that it's being seriously considered right now to try and address the plug-in log. And just for those that may not be aware, I mean, the plug-in log with Trace is very verbose, and the app server has rotating Trace's logs, and the plug-in does not. And currently, the only way I know of is, and you can send me an email, there is a way in Unix to do it, not in Windows. There's some Unix commands where you can basically rotate the plug-in log by running a cron job, and you'll lose some trace entries for some period of time, but it's doable. So send me an email, and I can send you those commands.
Okay, thank you. And I'll also mention that on today's presentation, on the first slide, is Bob's email address. And then there's another question in the group chat. Is there an ISA tool for HTTP plugin.log analysis?
Level 2. no, there isn't that we have. Pretty much, if you have some concerns, you can create a PMR and we can look at it.
Okay, thank you. So at this time, we will conclude the presentation. We hope the information presented today has been valuable to you. We appreciate your participation, and we hope you'll join us for future presentations, which will be announced on the WebSphere Support Technical Exchange site. Remember, a replay of today's presentation will also be available on this site in the next day or two. Thanks very much for joining us today, and thank you, Rob, for presenting today.
Welcome.